This week on Making Contact.
Viva el pueblo. Vivan los trabajadores. Estas fueron mis últimas palabras.
September 11 is the day that changed the life of so many Chileans.
They took them and nobody knew where they were. They killed them, of course.
On September 11, 1973, a U.S.-backed military junta toppled Chilean President Salvador Allende, marking the beginning of decades of repression. On this edition, an encore presentation of Pauline Bartoloni's documentary about a group of Chilean exiles in the U.S. who transformed their experience of terror into artistic expression. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information.
I come from a small town in the coast, central coast of Chile, 100 kilometers of Santiago.
Quique Cruz.
But I was a student at a special magnet school for artists in Santiago by the time that the coup came.
I was living in my hometown. It's called Antofagasta, which is at the very north of Chile.
Fernando Feña Torres.
Bordering the Atacama Desert. Very beautiful place. And I was, 15, 16 years old.
I was living in the southern part of Chile.
Hector Salgado.
Near Concepcion, which is the second largest city of Chile. A small town called Tomé.
I remember 1970. I remember that year because that was the year of the elections, and it was the year when Allende won the elections. And I remember very well that people were really happy. I remember how people start talking about politics all over the place. So a lot of people were politicized at that time, including myself. I remember at the end of the 60s, there was all this thing with the guerrillas in Bolivia, you know, Che Guevara. And we all like Che Guevara's wannabe. We want to be like Che Guevara.
I was doing high school. And when Allende got elected, obviously everybody went out in the street and celebrated. And, you know, I joined them, maybe not knowing very much what the whole thing meant to, you know, to everybody. But I could see that people were happy, and my family was happy, my mother was happy.
A lot of people start to realize that the country was yours and that you have to do something about it. If you wanted to receive something, go out, organize in your neighborhood, organize in your school, your factory, wherever you are, and, you know, do something. So that was really important. In that sense, it was truly a social revolution.
If you were involved in the politics of Chile, as I was culturally, you could see how the door was closing little by little and how things were being stepped up. And so you could see, you know, the night coming.
On September 11th, 1973, the U.S.-backed military junta, led by Augusto Pinochet, bombed the Chilean presidential palace repeatedly, with President Salvador Allende and 40 civilians inside. The violent coup seized the country in one day, and the military regime maintained power until 1990. Upwards of 5,000 Chileans were killed in the violence. Tens of thousands were tortured and disappeared in the years that followed. Hector Salgado, Feña Torres, and Quique Cruz remember the weeks that followed the September 11th coup.
In that day, I was sleeping, I remember. It was in the morning. And my brother came to my room, and he told me there's a coup d'etat, golpe de estado. And I didn't believe him, because he used to bother me a lot. He was my younger brother. And I told him, go away. And then he came back again, and he told me, no, seriously, there's a coup d'etat.
We heard about the coup d'etat in the radio very early in the morning as the troops were moving into surround the palace where Allende was and trying to topple the government. That was heard on the radio.
Tienen la fuerza. Podrán avasallar. Pero no se detienen.
He was very calm. he wasn't mad. That was incredible.
La historia es nuestra y la hacen los pueblos.
Immediately, the army in my town start to come out, take over the streets. The tanks, the trucks, all the army personnel was outside on the streets. So that was really scary. And that, I think, it was a clear sign that, you know, if you're going to rebel, you're going to be killed. So you better watch out.
I was being hunted. I couldn't sing anymore. I couldn't play my instruments. The books were not available. What would you do? So you get very, very pissed in a situation like that. And when you are young, there is some sense of poetry of participating in this affair of trying to end what's going on. And I actively participated in ending the nightmare.
I was very mad about everything. I wanted to do something. I wanted to protest the coup d'etat. I wanted to help other people to protest. Even though I was 16 years old, I started to work with people in my neighborhood, and we decided to be active.
Something happened, and they start putting us in prison, one by one.
The coup was in September, and I went to prison. By the end of October, I went to prison for the first time. I was 17 years old. I didn't have any more a free life. From then on, I lived with a different identity. I went into the underground, basically.
And I was taken in prison in October 7, 1973. And after that, I went to a couple of different concentration camps. Around the end of December 1973, I was condemned to go to prison for 3 years. So my life after the coup d'etat was basically in the first month hiding, and the following month and year in prison.
Time in jail goes very slow. It goes very slow. The relativity of time is put to test there. A day is a long, long day. But all the better if you're an artist, in a way, because, you know, that's why you need time. I have to say that even though the experience of being in concentration camps during the dictatorship, it was very hard. The contradiction is that it was a very vibrant time for me as a musician and as an artist.
I learned a lot in jail because we never mix with the common prisoners. We have our own pavilions. So you went into our pavilion. It was very clean. It was painted. We have workshops, we have a library, you know. Most of us were young intellectuals, professors, you know, workers. So I learned the collective way of life.
While I was in jail, one of the things that I wanted to do while I was there, after seeing people playing music, it was to be, is to learn how to play guitar. And one of the prison gave me a guitar to practice one day, and then a couple of days after, I offered him to buy the guitar so I could have it every day.
The second day that I was in a concentration camp, I was already playing. And I created a duet, and then later a trio, and then later a quartet that was called Los de Grimaldi, because the four of us have gone through Villa Grimaldi, and we have survived experience. And so we sang, we wrote songs, and we performed for the prisoners. So for me, to do music in jail was the most refreshing thing, the most protective thing, the thing that kept me alive, and the thing that kept my imagination fresh and finally a safe place.
The main role for me and for the other musicians was to entertain the other prisoners. That was our mission, to make them laugh and be happy. And also it was to keep their spirit high, their political belief strong. And I think we were very successful in that. And every time we play, we could see the people, the fellow prisoners, enjoying the music and also getting strength to continue.
We'll have more about Chile's 9/11 in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit us on the web at radioproject.org. By the end of 1976, Fenia Torres, Quique Cruz, and Héctor Zagallo were forced into exile after years of incarceration in Chile. Dispersed throughout North America, they lived separate lives until they found each other in Berkeley, California in 1980. Quique, Héctor, and Fenia joined three others at La Peña Cultural Center to form Grupo Raíz, an Andean wind ensemble. With quena and charango in hands, they performed around the world to raise awareness about social struggles in Latin America.
I lived with a guitar, a drum, an Andean drum, Andean flutes. So I brought a group with me. So when I arrived in Canada, in Vancouver, I immediately looked for people who were musicians. After 2 years that I'd been there, I heard that in La Peña Cultural Center, there was a great musician. His name was Rafael Manriquez, who was looking for musicians to make a record. And so I came.
I met Héctor in New York. I arrived to Boston, and then I moved from Boston to New York, and I lived with Héctor for a couple of months. And then some people knew I was there from California, and they knew that I was a musician, that I played, you know, these instruments, charango and all this instrument. And there was Quique and some other people here, and they called me from New York to Berkeley. And I came here in 1979. And we formed this group called Grupo Raíz.
And then I heard that Fenia was in Boston. And then I heard from somebody else that he was coming to New York to live there. So we started playing together.
I went to New York to a meeting, and I learned that there was a duet of these musicians, and then I met Fenia there. And then Fenia said to me, I've seen you play, I heard you play. And I said, yeah, well, where? And he said, you know what, when I was in jail in Santiago, I was in a concentration camp that was divided by this wall between Pavilion A and Pavilion B. And in the afternoons, there was a guy who play the quena, the flute, in the afternoons, and you play the flute, and I heard that flute. And then later on, I knew that it was you. And so I asked him to come to Berkeley.
¿Cuántas personas hablan español? How many people speak English? We say this because we like to speak a little bit Spanish in our concert. So tonight, we're going to speak French.
Grupo Raíz had a concert at La Peña. So my sister took me there. This was like 2 days after I arrived here.
Elizabeth Lichi Fuentes.
I was really blown away with the place, first of all. and then to find a group of Chileans, and I found out what they were doing. And I connected with Rafa, who is the friendliest guy in the band. And I ended up singing that the same night on stage with him. We were just, you know, jamming in the back of the stage. And they invited me to stay working with them.
But before we leave, we want to say a little message that we have been, as you know, Grupo Raíz is opposed to the U.S. intervention in El Salvador, and also we are opposed to the meaning of the number of port in Nicaragua.
Combine the music with a message that talks about people without work and the life of the peasants in Chile and the working class, the people, the homeless and women. We try to convey through the music, you know, the Chilean experience. We were so busy, and we were so much involved, and there was so much to do every day. I mean, people were calling us every day to do benefit for Guatemala, for El Salvador, for Nicaragua, for Argentina. I mean, it was incredible, the amount of work.
You know, it was planned. You know, we planned to do a very professional group, and we did it. And we traveled all over the country. We did like two or three national tours. We went to Central America, Europe. We did some recordings, you know, and we give ourselves a little salary. We were professionals. We rehearsed every day, you know, like from 9 to 12, 9 to 1, every day.
It was our commitment that the majority of the money was going to Solidarity in Chile. So we had a salary. It was like $230 a month. And that even in those days didn't pay much. And so we all lived together. We rehearsed every day. So it's like 9 to 5 job, we rehearsed. And in group, we analyzed the situation in Chile. We were all part of Casa Chile, which was a solidarity organization here. So it was a lot of discussions. I can tell you that it was easy because human beings, and especially in a group, you have differences of opinion. But one of the things that it was very strong was the commitment. And even though sometimes we had endless discussions and really heated conversations or discussions, we were so clear, so committed, and so clear that our work was so important in those days. So even if there were days that we didn't like each other very much, it was never a doubt that we were all gonna continue.
La Voz was a song that we got from Chile. The lyrics were so powerful that we decided to include it in the repertoire. It was the time when I think it was the highest point of the highest point in the struggle against the dictatorship in Chile. It was in the 80s, mid 80s, and people were really, really tired of the Pinochet regime. It was so powerful, just the image of the singer and being the voice of all those people who don't have a voice to express themselves. In a way, we wanted to be that voice of those people in Chile who could not be here outside in the United States, and who wanted to convey the message that they were struggling and fighting against the dictatorship.
Grupo Raíz's music was part of the Nueva Canción, or New Song, movement. While the style was most popular in the 1960s and 70s in Latin America, the themes of popular struggle and social change are still relevant today. In the early 1980s, Grupo Raíz performed several European tours and traveled to Nicaragua with folk singer Pete Seeger.
We were at the Winnipeg Folk Festival. In the afternoon, you know, the sun was coming down, and then I saw this figure walking through this field, and it was a very tall person, and he had a big thing in the back that was the neck of a banjo. And people were following this figure, you know, and he moved through the field and people were following him. And I just was very curious. And then I went there and it was Pete Seeger. And I said, I've heard about Pete Seeger. And I introduced myself to him and I gave him a record. Well, the story has a twist because a few years later, La Peña Cultural Center was in bankruptcy. And they were talking about closing La Peña because we didn't have money. So I just wrote to Pete Seeger, just out of the blue. I said, this is Kike Cruz. I met you at the Winnipeg Festival. I gave you our record. And this is the situation. This is La Peña's history, and this is our home. We cannot close this place. It's a really important place for us. Would you please come and do a benefit for us? And he answered me right away, and he said, yes, I'll come. You have to provide 3 tickets for me, one for my wife Toshi, and one for my banjo.
Yo soy un hombre sincero, de donde crecen las palmas.
In 1985, Grupo Raíz went their separate ways, but still perform on occasion at La Peña Cultural Center in Berkeley. Looking back 32 years after the coup in Chile, Feña Torres, Quique Cruz, Héctor Salgado, and Lichi Fuentes believe that justice still has not been served in their country, and remember the role the United States government played in the day that changed their lives.
You know, the feeling of the September 11 is not different. You know, now that the horror, the whole experience is so much there alive for us. And when I say for us, I mean the victims.
It is it's a shock to return to the country because there is something that doesn't really correspond between the country of the memory and the real country. And so it's been shocking to have come back to Chile, but at the same time it's been very happy because you are able to first visit your family and friends, but also to see, you know, maybe the real country is a mirror. It's a mirror where you see how much you have changed.
I don't know if it's never going to feel like a closed chapter, you know, it's like... I don't think it's possible. I'm so amazed that 30 years has passed and that justice is so fragile. You know, it's like it hasn't happened, period.
It's a little bit funny and curious to know that, you know, I ended up in this country, which the government of this country promoted the coup in Chile in 1973. And now you see from the perspective of 30 years and you find out that it seems like a lot of people don't understand history. It seems like we're still committing the same mistakes that we committed in the past.
Because what we suffered in Chile was a state terrorism, and state terrorism that was supported systematically by the government of the United States. And that, I think, is a really important notion, and it's a really good opportunity to make us think about what is terrorism And in the case of Chile, it's irrefutable that the United States participated actively in bringing the coup, during the coup, and all the years that the dictatorship was in power, they supported them. And they knew what they were doing.
One thing is the government of the United States, and another thing is the people of the United States. And I have found an amazing community here. And it's difficult, it has been difficult to live here in the emotional part because your family and your heart is always there. I have a huge family and they're all in Chile. But you know, the people here became my family too. And still today, I feel that I'm more useful here than there.
That morning of September 11, 1973, it was very much like the morning of September 11, 2001 here in the U.S.
Pain is pain, death is death, the loss of people is terrible under any circumstances, no matter what are your ideals. And so I can put the two countries together in terms of the pain of losing lives. But the circumstances are so different.
A friend of mine a couple of days ago called me and talked to me about that. And he said, can you believe that? We have been going through two events in one lifetime. And it was just amazing because, yeah, we've been through two events in our lifetime who, in a way, have marked us so much. You know, the music is still current. A lot of the things that we were saying 20 years ago are very relevant today.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. You've been listening to the documentary Chile's 9/11, produced by Pauline Bartoloni. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. Or check out our website at radioproject.org to get our podcast, download past shows, or help make a difference by supporting our work. Making Contact is supported by listeners like you. You allow us to continue to offer our program for free to radio stations across the U.S. and in Canada and South Africa. Thank you. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Pauline Bartoloni, producer and online editor, Khan Pham, associate director, Carl Jagbandhan Singh is volunteer coordinator, Daphne Young, station relations, Rachel Kozlovsky is our production intern, and Dan Turner, Ron Rucker, Alton Bird, and Dauda Zaleh, volunteers. And I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.